This is a caffeinated risk espresso shot.
Since we're talking about machine learning and stuff, I've heard some criticisms occasionally on the whole modeling an attack tree. Now, I think because you're generating hundreds of thousands, it's a different situation. But often we find that these models need to rely on expert opinion of some sort. And, you know, everybody has an opinion. But if you have a couple opinions, that's one thing. But if you had the opinions of 1,000 SMEs in a particular field of study, like building mechanics or cybersecurity or metallurgy or any of those things, wouldn't that sort of be data? Could we use that to inject into a model such as yours to cross-check what's come out of what your computer figured out on its own? Could we use the humans as a training set to kind of validate the outcomes that come from an attack tree?
I'm going to answer that question in a couple of different ways. First of all, when we create these models, and you're right, we populate, for example, details or information about each exploit activity as to the resources the adversary is going to have to put forth to carry out or execute that exploit. Mm-hmm. Ideally, in an ideal world, what we use is what we call metrics. Metrics, the very word metric, it comes from the Greek, it means to measure. Mm-hmm. So if, for example, an adversary needs a particular piece of equipment, a specialized piece of equipment to do some exploit, I can go out and consult catalogs, maybe go to different stores, and within an uncertainty, I can come up with a measurable value for the cost of that particular device. So that is an objective, both quantitative and objective measurement. If we had our druthers, we would prefer to do nothing other than use quantitative objective metrics.
Right.
Sometimes, though, it is necessary, as you point out, to rely on the opinions, which are necessarily subjective, of your subject matter experts. An example of that might be something, for example, asking the question, what kind of technical ability is required to break a very large number, perhaps like the kind they use in cryptography, into prime factors? Well, it turns out that there's no absolute answer to that question. Scientists and academics have been working on that problem for many, many decades. To my knowledge, they've yet to come up with an efficient solution. So an expert in the field might say, on a scale of 1 to 10, I haven't proven that that's impossible to do effectively, but there's certainly a lot of evidence to suggest that it has. I'll rate that as a 9 on the scale of 1 to 10.
Right.
Now, to your point of, could we crowdsource some of these opinions? In a way, that's kind of exactly what we do.
Okay.
When people ask me about how do I build an attack tree, do I start at the top and work down or start at the bottom and work up? I jokingly say I kind of start at the outside and work in towards the middle. What I'll tend to do is I'll build my attack tree based on the architecture of whatever it is I'm trying to protect. So I go down and I try and get the basic classes, you know, a taxonomy, the categories of different attacks that might take place. And I diagram those out and build the tree as fully as I can. But then what I do is I say, you know what, I may have missed something. So I do, in fact, crowdsource, but the crowd that I turn to are the hackers, the people who are busy trying to break into things.
Right.
And their repository of knowledge is in places like the CVE database.
Right.
So if I'm working with a given technology, after I've done my best at it and outlined the architecture, I'll go to some of these databases and say, you know, what actual attacks have been occurring against these assets? Most of the time, as I go through, I say, oh, yes, that fits in this bin and that fits in the other bin. And I go along merrily saying, yep, I'm patting myself on the back. I've got this covered. And then I discover, oh, look at that. it never occurred to me that you could do an attack like that. And I take that information and I then update or enhance my tree to try and capture that category of attacks that I might have missed. So in that sense, I am crowdsourcing to the real experts in the field, the hackers out there.
If they know about it, you'd want to know about it too. I think that's awesome.
Oh, yeah, no kidding.
Okay. That clears up a lot because I think there's some misconception about how it's just somebody's guess or something like that. But it's ironic you mentioned CVE because more than a few times I often will go look around there. It's like, so what's the real temperature on this? Yeah, nothing's happened for 10 years. I'm not going to work that hard.
Yeah. Okay. Exactly. Yep.
It's either not vulnerable or nobody cares about it anymore. So
yeah, even the hackers have forgotten about it.
Yeah, exactly.
But you know, the other point to be made, and that is that attack trees focus on architecture. Yes, they can go as low down into the weeds as you want them to, but I find that the most value comes from exploring whether or not you've built an inherently, intrinsically secure architecture.
Right.
Now, a lot of people think that things are changing very rapidly in the computer field. I mean, that's what we hear on the news all the time. But the truth of it is that our computer architectures have fundamentally remained unchanged for many decades. The cell phone that's likely in your pocket has the same basic architecture as an IBM 360 did back in the mid-1960s. And not surprisingly, most of the attacks that are occurring today, if you search out in the academic literature, you can find references to that type of attack, usually 10, 15, 20, or even further back. So by focusing on architecture, we usually pick up the vast majority of ways that an asset can be attacked. And yes, we fine-tune it with some of this other stuff, but the architecture is the essence.